fans, here we go. Four two-minute rounds of boxing scheduled. Women's in the ring.
In the latest edition of the two-minute round face-to-face, we speak to Zulén Morbina, a 26-year-old amateur standout for Mexico who went pro last summer under the banner of Sanford Promotions, the biggest promoter in Latin America. She has been well-promoted in Mexico in her three professional fights and is looking to make her pro debut in the United States sometime this year. The story how Urbina came to the sport she loved is like many others in the sport of boxing. It all began at a young age.
Well, ever since I was a young little girl, I was always into sports. I was never really the little girl that played with dolls or anything like that. I was always playing basketball, soccer, baseball. My older brother started attending a local boxing club, and I was 10 years old at the time, and I begged them to take me. Of course, they're like, no, you're my little sister. Why are we going to take you? They didn't want to, and I begged my dad to make them take me, and I got my way, and my father forced them to take me to the gym with them, and I fell in love. I fell in love with the sport.
How old were you at that time?
I was 10 years old.
10 years old. And your brother was how much older than you?
My brother was, I believe, 17, and the other one was 19.
And this was in Phoenix, where you now live?
Yes, Phoenix, Arizona.
Okay, and before that, I mean, obviously your brothers had taken up boxing, but was there anybody in your family, dad's uncle, grandfather, anybody that had been a boxer as well?
No, it's boxing is actually something that was born between us brothers, so Urbina brothers, because nobody in our family has ever boxed. My dad, he sings, he plays instruments, and I mean, nothing with boxing. I mean, we would watch boxing on TV, but it's not like anybody in our family ever did it.
Mm-hmm. But your dad was a boxing fan, and your family was a boxing fan while you were growing up?
Yes, yes. Well, on we grew up watching Chavez fight, Morales, everybody. I mean, every time there was a big fight, my parents would have a barbecue on Saturdays, and we'd watch it with the family. And so everybody was a boxing fan.
So you were 10 years old when you first walked into the gym. What was it about boxing that interested you? What was it about boxing that you wanted to practice it, being a 10-year-old little girl who obviously was expected to play with dolls and wanting to learn how to sew and cook and stuff like that?
Well, I think that what drew me to boxing was its difficulty. It's not a sport that you play. It's competitive, and I've always been very competitive ever since I was a young little girl, and I think that's what drew most of the attention. Plus, the physical torture that you put your body through. I remember all that cardio, that running. I mean, I was gassed out. I remember the first few weeks we were doing a lot of running and exercises that I had never done, and I just didn't want to give up. I wanted to push myself, and I think the difficulty of it made me fall in love with it.
Now, at 10 years old, you find yourself at the gym. How old were you when you actually had your first amateur fight?
I had my first amateur fight at 11 years old, year later.
And what do you remember about that?
Well, I remember it was a town called Tucson, and it was away from home, so my parents didn't go watch me or my brothers. I was on my own with my teammates, and I remember, you know, it's your first fight. You kind of, you don't know how to do things, and I ate pizza right before I fought. I remember starting to warm up, and I was still full because I had eaten so much, and then once I stepped into the ring, I could feel my jelly legs, and I was just so nervous. I remember throughout the whole fight, there really wasn't much technique going on. It was just throw. It was nonstop throwing for 3 1-minute rounds. But it was very exciting. I won, and it's a really good memory that I have.
Do you miss not having your parents or your brothers there, especially your brothers who, you know, you followed into the boxing gym, and did you miss not having them there in your first fight?
By that time, I was the only one that was training at that gym. So I was kind of used to not having them around. My mom didn't really like me boxing. She would rather have me at home cooking and helping her out with the chores. So it was always a constant struggle with her wanting to let me box. So it was my thing. It didn't bother me that I didn't have them there. But it would have been nice. It would have been nice to feel that support. But, I mean, at the same time, I was enjoying myself.
What about your dad and his thoughts about you boxing at that time?
My dad was the one that from day one supported me. He made my brother take me to the gym. He would tell my mom, no, she wants to go to the gym, let her go. And he was always busy working late hours and on weekends to provide for us. So he couldn't be there with me all the time. But he was always supporting me. He's the one that told me to always go for it.
Now, is your mom a homemaker? What does your dad do?
My dad's a welder. He welds. He works with metal all day long, and he has long early hours, and sometimes he stays late. He provides for our family, and he always has.
After a handful of amateur fights early on, her mother got what she wanted and made Sulem leave boxing for a time. Not to be deterred, Sulem went back to the gym 6 years later, but this time found her way to the Phoenix Knockout Boxing Club, where the head trainer was Andrew Soto.
I did start boxing at a young age. However, like I said, my mother didn't really allow me to box. So I only had a few amateur fights when I was 11 years old, and then she made me quit. And then I stopped for the longest time. I didn't return to the gym until I was about almost 17 years old. And once I started at a gym, it was called Knockout Boxing Club, and I went to that gym specifically because Andrew Soto, who's now my husband, he had the best boxers in the state. They never lost, so I wanted to go to where I felt that I was going to actually learn and get better and get to that level. And he started training me, and it was very hard because he didn't want me at the gym at first. He would do everything to get me to quit. And now I have 10 years training with him in March. And since then, I've been a four-time national champion. I've represented Mexico in numerous international competitions. Nobody in Mexico ever beat me. I was always number one. I went to the Central American Games. I qualified for the Pan Am Games. I fell short of the Olympic Games, but I did go attend the America's Olympic qualifiers. I got to, because of boxing, I got to travel all around the world, and it's truly a blessing that I learned so much in all that international competition.
Now, I do remember at the time of at the end of your amateur career, you did make public your dissatisfaction with some of the politics in the amateur program in Mexico. Can you just touch on that quickly about what was that about?
Well, in Mexico, when you're part of the national team, you are required to stay at the Olympic Training Center all year long. Whether you have competition or whether you don't, you have to be training at the Olympic Center. And I did the best I could. However, I was not happy with the training that I had at the Olympic Center. I felt like my skills had degressed. I pushed myself for a good 3 years staying with the national team and doing their group trainings. And as you know, boxing at the end of the day, it's an individual sport. What works for you doesn't necessarily work for the next person. And I was just unhappy with the training thing. I was at a point where I felt like I was stuck. And I went from when I first got to the national team not only getting nothing but gold medals, to then silver, to then bronze, to then not even medals. So I was dissatisfied with the training there. And in the last Olympic qualifier, I pushed myself as much as I could, but I didn't qualify. I lost in quarterfinals. And for the last year and a half, Mexico had been already struggling because of politics. We weren't, as athletes, we weren't getting paid anymore. We were paying for our trips. We were struggling. It was the worst part. So when I went to the Olympic qualifier in Argentina, different people helped me to get to the Olympic qualifier, but the Mexican national team did not pay any of my expenses. I paid my whole way. And I didn't qualify. I come back, and we still have one more Olympic qualifier, which is the World's Tournament. And I sit down in the office, and I have a conversation with the president of the federation, and I told him, I said, I want to go to the next Olympic qualifier, but I don't want to just go to attend. I want to go to qualify. And I don't feel happy with the training here. I feel like if you allow me to go home and train at home and fly from there to the Olympic qualifier, I could really do something. And he told me he would think about it and give him a few days and he would think about it. And I came back to the office a few days later, and then he talked to me and he said, you know what, if I allow you to do that, then everybody around here is going to think that they can go home and train at home with their trainers and so whatnot. So he said, I'm sorry, but I can't let you go. And I said, I told him, I think it's not fair. If I'm paying for all my expenses, I'm taking care of myself, I should have a say in how I train. Mm-hmm. And so permission was denied. Then he pulls his secretary in. He's a lawyer himself. And he starts dictating this letter about how I have decided to leave the national team. You know, at that time, all kinds of emotions are going through me, and I sign the paper that I am leaving the national team because I'm going to come back and train at home, and because I'm going to go to school, because through that conversation I had said that I was going to come back and go to school and had other plans. But the way he twisted everything, he didn't really explain why I was leaving the national team. I signed the paper, I leave, I come back home. And my coach and I decide that I'm just going to start training to just get back to where I was, because I felt like my skills weren't really there at that time. And I had let it go. I was done competing in Mexico. I had accepted it. Then I believe a week before the second Olympic qualifier, I see a note published on social media saying that another female athlete is going to this Olympic qualifier in my weight division. And this athlete has never competed at my weight class, never won her spot. She wasn't even the number two. I had a number two there that was my sparring partner that was second in the national team. I mean, if it would have been her, she was already training at the Olympic Center. She was number two. I mean, so she had all that going if I wasn't. But this girl was training back home. She was national champion, I believe, at 125, which isn't 112. Mm-hmm. She never won her spot, and they allowed her to go straight from home to the Olympic qualifier. Mm. So, you know, that was just why her and not me. You know, if I have provided for Mexico so many medals, if I have spent so many years with them for them, why did they do that to me? And I was heartbroken. Mm-hmm. I felt like they did me wrong.
Mm-hmm. Now, well, that was done, and then you moved on and you decided to go professional. And before we touch on to that, mm-hmm. you mentioned that your trainer is your husband as well, Andrew Soto. How long have you been training with him, and how long have you guys been married?
We've been training together. In March, it'll be 10 years, and we've been married for 7 years. 7 years now.
Now, and what is the dynamic there, being husband and wife and also being trainer and fighter? How does that work? Where do you stop being the wife and start being the fighter and vice versa?
No, it's, I would lie if I would say it's not difficult. It is. It is. But I know he only wants the best for me. How can I say it? He pushes me so much because he wants me to be the best. And he organizes his days around me, so for my training, for my schedule, for everything. And I truly appreciate him. Sometimes I have really bad days in the gym, and I know that he's pushing me, and I really don't even want to talk to him afterwards. But you know what? Once I'm in the ride home, I have to just turn off the switch, and that's it. What happened in the gym stays in the gym. It's like having two different personalities. It's like he's my husband outside, and inside he's my coach. And I already knew the way that he coached, and that's something that we said before we got married, before we even started a relationship. We said that boxing was not going to interfere at all with our relationship, and I think that's why it's worked out.
Now you went.
We set the rules before it started.
No, that's the smart way to do it. Now you went professional in July. You signed with Sanfer, who is the biggest promoter in Mexico, if not in all Latin America. How did that come about? Did they approach you? Did you approach them? How did you end up signing with Sanfer?
Well, like you said, Sanfer is the biggest promotional group in Latin America. Since I was on the national team, we had been, we always get invited to nice boxing events in Mexico City and different events. So Sanfer already knew about me, and I went to a card, I believe it was Margarito versus Fares Jr. in Mexico City, and they met me there, and they had me as one of their special guests. And when they told me, just let us know when you get back from Argentina. Just focus on this and just let us know when you get back, and we'll see what we can do. And I had other offers from other companies, but I knew that Sanfer was the one I wanted to go to. I love how they work with Box Azteca, so that was a plus. And I felt that the other companies already had too many female boxers. I felt that they had so many female boxers that why was I going to be one of their priorities, you know? So I felt Sanfer was the way to go. My husband, once we decided that I was ready to take the next step, started contacting them. They started having conversations. I just worried about my training, that's it, and they set everything up.
Before all that, Urbina found herself in the headlines, but not in any way anybody would like. Urbina's younger brother, Alexis, was bidding 3 years ago in the family home. Alexis, an amateur stander in his own right, a 2013 U.S. national champion, died days later from his injuries. First, the reason and his assailants were a mystery, but nearly 2 years later, his assailant was convicted for his murder to 25 years in prison. That night of her pro debut in Tijuana, Mexico, last July 30th, Alexis was present in Sulem's mind.
That night, I wasn't even myself. It's completely a different feeling. I've fought in big stages before in international competition, but like you said, it's completely different. The emotion's completely different. For me, it was very emotional because I don't know if you know, 3 years ago I lost my brother, mm-hmm. Alexis Urbina, who was also a boxer. And he always talked about my professional debut. So I had that in the back of my head the whole night. I mean, the whole week, practically, the whole time that I was getting ready for that, I was remembering him saying, I can't wait for you to turn pro. I want to see you fight pro. And I was emotional. That whole day I was emotional. Sanfer really did an outstanding job promoting me for that fight. There was commercials left and right all over Mexico. I was a co-main event, and it was a packed card. The arena was packed. Tickets were sold out. I remember when I was warming up, my legs felt like they were gone. I was so nervous. Then I'm standing there in front of all these cameras getting ready to do my walkout, and I see all these people I really couldn't believe it. And I get in there and it's just everything goes by so fast. Everything goes so fast. And then, of course, I have these commentators, which are legends. I mean, I had Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. commentating my fight, which absolutely made me even more nervous. But I pulled through. I didn't look great on my pro fight, but I pulled it through, and I grew a lot from it. I learned a lot from it, and that's where I learned that it's a different ball game. It's the power is different, the speed is different, the style is completely different, and I learned that there's a lot of adjustments that I have to make to my game plan.
Now, looking back on that and everything you described, and obviously having you know, the tragedy of your brother's passing looming over you, and how connected you guys were with being boxers. Looking back on that first night in your pro debut and with the cameras and with Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. being there and everything, do you think that it would have been better for you if it wouldn't have been that big of an event, that you would have felt more comfortable and maybe would have been a better choice at this, looking back at the whole, at that whole day?
I think that I worked so hard in my amateur career for something like that. So whether I was nervous or I didn't look great, it really didn't matter, because that's what I had worked for. That's what I expected. You know, I expected a big day like that, and I took it like a blessing. Whether I didn't shine like I should have, I surely grew from it, and I grew from it so much that it's only making it easier as I'm going on, because I had that big spotlight on my debut on the day that a lot of people, you know, dream of. And so now from that one night, I took so much that I've looked better as each fight's gone on, and I know I am better prepared, and I know more of what to expect now.
What has been the easiest for you in this transition from amateur to professional? What has been the easiest aspect of that?
I think that for a long time, for international competition, I changed my style. I was a lot of a boxer. I was bouncing in and out, and I practiced a lot on my speed. And before that, I was a brawler. So I think the easy part was, you know, going back to that first style that I developed before competing international. And now with having those both those tools, I know how to mix it up. But definitely it's the pros. It's something different that I have to adjust to. It's not easy.
And what has been the most difficult part of going from amateur to pro up to this point in the three professional fights that you've had?
The style, getting used to the style now. Because I was used to so much speed from my opponent in international competition that now it throws me off a little when I see slower boxers. Mm. And I gotta start adjusting a little more to the power and to sitting down on my combinations. That's been the difficult part, the pace, I guess, slowing down the movements a little more.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're a little bit older than most when it comes to making your pro debut. You're 26 years old. A lot of Mexican fighters, female fighters or male, end up turning pros in their teens, 18, 17, 19 years old. Do you think that has helped you, or do you think it has hurt you in being a little bit older than most in making your pro debut?
I think for me personally, I think it has helped me, because I feel like everything that I have gone through, everything I've experienced, I'm a little more ahead of the game. I know a little more than somebody who's 17 years old debuting, because of everything I experienced fighting so many different styles. There is cases for other boxers that, you know, turn pro when they're a lot older and they leave everything in the amateurs. But for me, I think I've developed pretty nicely, and I'm in the right time right now.
Now, I'm sure that you follow female boxing as much as your audience does, and you've seen the upsurge this year in the last 6 months of female boxing in the United States. We had Heather Hardy fight Shelley Vincent on NBC Sports Network. We just had Amanda Serrano fight Clarissa Jasmine Rivas on Showtime. We had Clarissa Shields make her pro debut on a pay-per-view card. Golden Boy announced that, you know, they signed the Olympic, what was her name? Marlene Esparza.
Esparza.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts of this whole new wave of female boxing happening in the United States? And do you see yourself one way or another a part of it?
No, I definitely see that there's a big change coming in women's pro boxing in general, not only in the U.S., but everywhere around. This is the first time that actually 80 female boxers from the international competition are turning pro. I mean, you have Katie Taylor, myself, Marlene Esparza. I know there's other female boxers that went to the Olympics that are planning on turning pro, and this is a big wave. I think this is going to be a big turning point for us. Seeing Rosita Rivas and Serrano, the way they fought on Showtime this past weekend, it really opened a lot of eyes, and it got the audience excited about women's boxing. And I truly believe that, honestly, not only in the U.S., but everywhere, women's boxing is going to start a new era.
Now, you and Marlene Esparza are around the same weight class. Have you guys faced each other in the amateurs?
Yeah, we have. Marlene, she's an outstanding boxer. We fought a few times, and unfortunately, I lost to her. They've always been very competitive fights, but she beat me.
Now, with her going pro under the Golden Boy banner, and you being with Sanford, which is online more with Top Rank, do you see that maybe being a big fight sometime in the future, when obviously you guys have more experience in the pro level, and obviously a significant purse can be put together for you guys? Is that something that you would say you would be looking forward to experiencing in the pros, a fight against Marlene Esparza down the road?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that it's something that both of us can sell. I think that we should sell ourselves short. We should demand for something good. I mean, we are boxers with a lot of skill. I can sell a lot of tickets, and we deserve for a big audience. So if it's televised and a good 10-rounder for something good, and how open the doors for women's boxing, I definitely see this in the future. I think that we could definitely open some eyes out there.
As far as what Urbina sees for her future, she says the lesson of the tragic loss of her brother has changed the way she thinks.
You know, honestly, I don't plan too much ahead. I'm the type of person that has, I've had a bumpy road. When my brother passed away, I learned that I can't sit there and make plans, because you never know what's going to happen. And, what I do is day by day, I do my best in whatever it is I'm doing. I'm giving it my all. With boxing right now, I'm going all out. This is all I'm focused on right now, and I'm taking it day by day, fight by fight. Of course, I want to be a world champion today. I dream of being a world champion, but I don't know what's going to happen. And all I have is to give it my best every single day.
Now, Sulema, why don't you tell the audience where they can find you, your Instagram, your Facebook, your Twitter. That way they can follow your career and they can keep up with Sulema Urbina.
Hi, everyone. So my social media is on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. All of them are at Sulema Urbina, even on Snapchat. So I just keep it simple with my name, and I do my best to answer any messages or everything. So just keep up with me.
Okay, Sulem, thank you for your time, and we wish you good luck on your next fight, and we'll be following your career into the future.
No, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
This has been the 2-Minute Round face-to-face with Sulem Urbina. And you can catch the 2 minute round, your hooks and jabs look at the female fight world every other Thursday here on the Leave It in the Ring Network with our next show set for February 2nd, 7 p.m. Pacific with my co-host David Avila and Elena Baby Doll Reed. Until next time.